I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by the 10K Collective. The 10K Collective is a collection of men and women who are doing at least $25,000 a month on Amazon in the UK, US, Europe, doesn't matter, but that is the figure as a minimum. Now, why that figure? Because it means you get to meet with like-minded people who are serious about Amazon, who are doing well, and who are ambitious to do better rather than knocking around with newbies, which isn't going to help you if you want to scale up from six figures a month to seven figures or whatever you're ambitious to do, four to five figures. We have people who are doing up to around the quarter of a million a month mark. And as I say, the lowest is 25K. So it's still quite a big spread, but we have amazing things that get shared. You will get 30 minutes each, minimum of 20, 25, even in a really busy month. And there's only 8 to 12 people at any given meeting. So what do we cover in the meetings? Well, we cover topics from how to stay in stock, make more money by not missing out and not being out of stock, dominating a market and the mindset needed, handling whole container loads, how to predict stock needed, for example, how to get a product on primetime British TV for free, as one of our members did back at Halloween last year. So these are not prescribed by me and it's not a set course. It is simply what comes up, what you need to handle right now to move your business forward. It's very simple, robust format. It's doing really well. We've got a great loyalty from the members. I think out of 10 people that have joined it so far, about 8 are still with us after several months, which is a real testament to the fact that they're getting value and there's a great feel of community and we have a lot of fun. We take business seriously, but we also try not to take ourselves too seriously. We have a lot of fun. We're very open and we have a lot of serious debates that actually result in people doing stuff and taking action, like opening up in America, like going to Germany, like, you know, doubling their orders. I mean, serious action takes place as a result of these meetings. And it's also good fun. You'll need to be able to get to London as well as doing 25,000 a month minimum, roughly in dollars. And it's application only. So if you want to check that out, go to amazingfba.com/mastermind. Make sure you click through to the 10K Collective page rather than applying for the Zero to Hero Mastermind, which is just for those who are just starting out. Thanks very much for listening. Now, on with the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Amazing FBA. Today, I'm delighted to welcome back to the show an old friend of the podcast really now, Nadine Eich from Enida, who is an expert in customer service, particularly for those who sell in Germany, which is a market I'm forever pressing people to try and sell there, particularly if they're UK-based and they're selling in the UK. So a fantastic place to access. And Nadine is one of the people that unlocks that market. So Nadine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be there again.
An honor. It's very sweet. So Nadine, tell us a bit more about yourself. Now, what's your sort of background? How did you come to be running customer service for Amazon sellers? That's obviously quite specialized.
I know. So basically, to jump right in, I was a virtual assistant and I only did like customer service because I've been doing that during my psychology studies. And so I became, you know, like a freelancer and that sort of thing. And then I met Jill from Private Label Journey. You might know him. I think you do. And we hit it off really well. And I said, you know, to him, if you search for somebody to rock your customer service, it's me. And then, well, he fell for it. So, and this is how we got started. And then I realized that there are more Amazon sellers out there. And so when that happened, we, you know, I asked another freelancer that I knew from my virtual assistant jobs, whether she wanted to, you know, start things up together. And that's what we did. And now we're 12 freelancers from all across, you know, like the world. And 11 of them are German. And one of them is a Filipino girl.
Okay, excellent. So very interesting that you, which I don't think I'd been clear, that you started off as a virtual assistant and then it naturally organically grew from where you were. So this is another hint to people when you're starting a business that even an Amazon-based business, that people get obsessed with trying to do something completely different from who they are and what they know. And you start off a business in what you know, and then you expanded it based on demand. So that's another common sense business lesson for anyone who's listening. Like, hello, why don't you start with what you understand and what you're good at? Just saying, you know, you could start with random products that you have no idea about, but I don't suggest anyone does that. So thank you for that little snippet. So tell us about the sorts of things that you were getting hired for yourself as a VA and what sort of things that you where that developed, what sort of stuff that you hire people out for now?
Okay, so I was initially hired at like a cake shop in Switzerland to do their customer service from Germany, and I did that, you know, location independent. And so it's just emails, you know, replying to emails, replying to bad feedback, you know, people who didn't like the cake and stuff like that. And I learned like a lot from the boss of the company. Not always to give in, because that's, you know, a main issue that, you know, the customer can pull all kinds of, you know, and they always get away from it, with it. And so I learned a lot from him. And obviously I've been working, you know, as a customer support agent for 4 years prior to that. And yeah, so I based it, I you know, basically said, we are responding to messages, we are doing negative feedback, you know, like responding to that and seller feedback. And this is what we do, you know, still, we still do that 2 years, you know, it's 2 years in. And my, you know, clients, they are all Amazon sellers. We specialize in Amazon sellers because this is how we can get really good at what we do, to specialize. And they hire us for exactly that, just take care of their customers.
Excellent, makes sense. And there's another major business hint, by the way. I like the simple hints that come out of this. Specialize because you can get good at what you do. That's another big hint, yes, rather than being everything everywhere all the time. So yes. What kinds of things? So you mentioned in customer service and you mentioned negative reviews. So what are the kinds of things that Amazon sellers can hire you for? What can you do? And equally, what is not possible for somebody to do from your perspective as a virtual assistant or a customer service assistant?
Okay, so basically when you hire us, it's just, you know, you give us the access to your Amazon Seller Central, and we go over your customer messages every 24 hours. And if a negative review comes in, we search for the order number. And when we find it, it you know, like 95% of the time we can find it, we reach out to the customer, send them a replacement or refund the money and reach out and be like, okay, look, we want to make you happy. And obviously with the thought in mind that they're going to, you know, delete that review. And so when, for example, there's a product that is broken, we will go out there and say, look, I just sent you a new one. And tip for everybody here, don't do that and go, can you please change your review? Don't ever do that. So the first thing I would advise you to do, because that's, you know, as a customer, I'd be like, sure, you sent me a replacement. Of course you did, right? And then you wait for a week and, you know, make like a reminder or something. That's what our girls do. And after a week, you reach out and say, did everything go okay? And if they then respond, yes, everything's fine, it's perfect, thank you so much, then you ask whether they can change the review. Because otherwise, you know, it's just, you know, you are asking them to do something that they will do like 10% of the time. But when you deliver, you know, what you said you were going to do, then they will, you know, do that 50% of the time. So it's biting the stats.
Okay, interesting. 50% of the time, not 10. So a couple of questions around that immediately then. The first thing is, you said you search for the order number for a negative review and 95% of the time you find it. That's an amazing percentage. Are you using some kind of software or you have a proprietary in-house tool? Because I know a lot of very smart people who find that very difficult to do.
Yeah, well, we have like a system, you know, internal system that, okay, I'm not going to give out.
You're not going to reveal, that's fair enough.
Yeah,
interesting. Well, that's certainly a big success. I mean, because I know a friend of mine that actually started off a service that would match the order with a negative review, and Amazon basically shut them down because they didn't want that happening. So Amazon actively doesn't want that happening. So just that's actually quite a hard thing to do. So just to let anyone who's tried to do this themselves know, that's really hard to do. You're getting a 95% success rate with that, if that's approximate. That's an amazing statistic. So you guys know something that the rest of us don't, definitely. That's the first thing to say. Second thing, I would just want to go on.
No, I was just going to say, it does work. You know, to date, it does. You never know what Amazon comes up with, right? And it might not work in a few months, but then you can just ask us. And yeah. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's a very valid point that you make. It's working now. Let's not be unrealistic about the future. That's true. It depends when you're listening to this recording. It's being made in July 2018. And as you say, Amazon could change a lot of things. But that's still a reason that I would get in touch with those guys, because even I couldn't even do it myself at all, never mind if I didn't want to outsource it or whatever. So that's a very powerful thing. The second thing, tell us about how do you deal with the whole suspension risk of asking of being seen by Amazon to be doing review manipulation, because obviously you're getting in touch with somebody, you're replacing a defective product. Very important. You're asking them to change their review. How does that play into those systems in your view?
Well, in fact, Amazon stated themselves that it is okay to reach out to the customer and actively ask them to put down the review. I have a screenshot of that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it. So Amazon said, make them happy, then you can ask them actively to change it. But do not tell them, I will make you happy if you do this and that. So that's the whole secret, right? Just deliver and then make them happy, you know, and then ask.
That's very, very interesting. Now, that's a very powerful point. If people are listening, get nothing else in this podcast. I mean, I'm sure that if they're intelligent, they'll get a lot more because you have a lot to offer. But that's a very, very important distinction. I love the fact that you've double-checked with Amazon and being professional about it. And as I would expect, of course, you're very structured, but that is an incredibly important distinction, because I do know several people that have had their entire selling accounts suspended, sometimes doing, you know, tens of thousands a month, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, and that is painful. So because of alleged review manipulation, and you just made a very clear point about the difference between great customer service, which Amazon encourages, which includes, now we've made you happy, would you consider changing review versus if you do this, then we'll do that, which is, shooting yourself in the foot, and you might as well commit suicide in terms of Amazon. Yeah. Great. Definitely. Thank you for clarifying that.
That's very important. You know, play by the rules, but also the phrasing, you know, just be kind. Don't sound like, you know, pissed off or anything, because it's very difficult. I get it. I sell with a friend of mine, I sell books online, and if they give me like a bad review, I'm going to cut that bitch, you know. And I'm like, okay, look, let's take a step back here. So I'll always try to keep like a very cool emotion, be like, look, I get that you feel that way, especially with physical products, and we refund you, and I get that, no worries. Always, you know, don't try not to let the emotion take over into your writing. Also, write the reply and then walk around the room. Breathe. And send it off then.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, it's that's a bit of general wisdom there, which is, it's incredibly dangerous to even leave a hint of resentment or anger or upset in written form, because for whatever reason, when people get an email, especially they're themselves in an upset friend of mine, they will read any small negative vibe in it and magnify that. And that's a general piece of wisdom in life. Write a read email, walk around the room, edit it, walk around the room, change it again until it is just professional.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. In our Anita Academy, you know, our girls go through like a whole academy where I state, you have to remember, this can be copy and pasted. This can be, you know, screenshotted and put onto Facebook. And, you know, everything you write has, you know, out of context, it has to be, you know, fine and, you know, bulletproof. So yes. Okay. My last point about that one.
Yeah. But that's an excellent point, because I hadn't really thought about that, but that's absolutely true. I mean, people do that every day. They'll take some outrageous piece of terrible customer service, or what they feel is terrible customer service, and basically spread it around social media. So that's a very good point. Hadn't thought of that at all. So that's a very, and out of context, that's another thing I hadn't thought of. So those are very, very, very professional points. Thank you very, very much. Those are really seriously important, actually. Thank you so much for that. Now, so you talked about customer service. Obviously, that's one of the things you offer. So when people are outsourcing, that's probably one of the first things you can outsource, I guess. I mean, are there other things that you think are easy or advisable to outsource early? And what things do you think you should leave to later in terms of tasks that you outsource?
Okay, so I think the most important part is, sourcing, actually, because of obvious reasons. And then pictures, because people are so visual, so extremely visual, And, you know, if you don't want to outsource your listing, I get that, then you have to educate yourself and keyword research and all that jazz. But after, you know, all the visuals and everything, and the sourcing, I would suggest having somebody who takes care of your negative reviews so you don't shoot yourself in the foot, as you said, you know, before everything is rolling. You know, we do have quite a few sellers who come to us really early on in their career, Amazon career, and say, look, I can't deal with this. It makes me upset. I don't want to read about it. I just want to focus on my business. And when people leave bad reviews and tell me that the material is crap, which is not true, then, you know, I get distracted. And yeah. Yes.
So they're taking the things out that are going to emotionally distract them and handing them to somebody neutral like yourselves.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense. So tell us a bit more about sourcing and photography. How early, well, let's talk about photography first. I mean, it sounds like you're basically saying you should definitely outsource photography pretty early on. Is that right?
Yes. I think it's very important to outsource that one as well as focus, not only focus on the product itself, but, you know, I'm not an expert, but not the product itself, but how to use the product. You know, don't have like 8 shots from every angle, because I want to see what, you know, this looks like if it's being used in a certain context. So I think it's very important to have somebody to have like amazing visualization, like a photographer, you know, from the book that I'm selling. It's the same, because we did have a pretty, you know, like a cover that I put up there. So I'm just testing the waters, and now I said, okay, look, this is working really well. And now I took, you know, money in hand and paid a really good designer to make like a cover where it's like, whoa, because that is what it's, you know, it stands out. And this is the one thing you've got going. You know, if somebody sees your product, they're not going to think about it 10 cents. Oh, I want to click on that. No, they're clicking on it because, I have to click on it. It looks so good. So this is why, you know, I'm not one of these people who are just going to be like, you have to outsource customer service. Put your money where it's actually going to get you a lot of sales. So I have something to work with. Customers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's a very good point, actually. So don't obsess with that, because customer service is an easy win and it's something people want to outsource early. But you make a very good point. Actually, really, the most responsible use of the money is where you're going to get a return on it. And I absolutely agree. I mean, designers and photographers, people get very cheapskate about that. And I was just working with a new client who's got a design background. He said, you know, Mike, people say to me, they want a $50,000 a month business or pounds or whatever, but they want to spend £100 on the design for their packaging. I might say, yeah, welcome to the cheapskate Amazon startup community. I mean, really, yes. The people who get it, like I was interviewing a member of the 10K Collective, Joe Jakes, who's a serious seller and doing, you know, very, very well. And he said, yeah, you know, I will spend £5,000 to £10,000 on designers and photography and copywriting for a sort of newish brand. And he said that's fairly cheap for him. Now, he has substantial capital, but interesting that he recognizes the hard cash value down the line of a really good photographer and a really good designer up front. So yeah, amen to that.
Amen. I mean, that's the thing. That's actually, I think that's crucial, because you have to stand out. You have to look professional. You have to look expensive. That's what I always say. You know, Apple looks expensive, and this is why everybody's going to Apple. And, you know, so this is what I always, also, if you're a small seller, I think the presentation is much more important than everything else. You have to seem like, you know, if let's say you have like 50 reviews, which would be good as a new product. And then you have an amazing picture. And then people obviously are just going to be like, oh okay, that must be serious. Even though it's not that many, you know, reviews yet, but it seems like more. Always fake it till you make it. So.
Yeah. As you say, yeah, the smaller you are, the better your initial impression needs to be. Yes. Absolutely. Tell us about sourcing then. So you were saying sourcing is also very good to outsource. Is that something your guys deal with as well? Do you deal with sourcing?
No, I know that because I work with two very dear friends / Amazon sellers, and I do their customer support. And we are a team of four, and one of them is our sourcing agent, who is based in China. And I always see how very crucial that is, that you have somebody who speaks Chinese, and also is very responsible and follows up with the people, negotiates with them. And I've spent a week with her in Thailand when we went out there for like a vacation thing. And, I see why it's the four of us, because, you have to have customer service very close by, always reporting what is going on, which our girls do as well. Every Monday you get like a report of what is happening. And, also from the other side that brings the information about the whole Chinese side of it, or wherever you buy your products from. So you're in the middle as a seller, and you get like that info, from the incoming product and the outgoing product. So I think it's important.
Yeah. And I guess what you're saying is something that I was trying to say to a client earlier, that in his case, it was an accountant that I was saying you need to go see, but you need a team of people around you, not necessarily people that you work with every day. I mean, a designer, a photographer, an accountant, you're not necessarily going to having a weekly conversation, but when you launch a new product or when you're reviewing your figures to make decisions, that's part of the team. But as you're saying, customer service, sourcing, so that even if you're quite a small seller, you can have a team, I think, earlier on than a lot of people do. And it's a mentality thing as well. Just because you're small, you have this mentality, because in the offline world, that's how it works, that it has to be just you and a computer doing 12, 14 hours a day, as opposed to, it doesn't matter that you're pretty small, you don't have to use them often, but you need to have that set of people around you who have an expertise in different areas, right?
Yes. Accountants, obviously, that's like, I'm not even going to get into that. That is the main thing you have to have. I didn't even think of that. Of course. But there are things that you outsource and things that you insource. And, outsource is more like, sourcing, designer, copywriter, and Inida is kind of between that, insourcing and outsourcing, because they are very responsive and stuff like that. But you don't have to worry about a lot of things, as opposed to having a team, because a team, we're going to get into that soon. It's hard to maintain, and it's a lot of work. So I think it's important. Sometimes obviously outsourcing costs more money than insourcing, as in having a team, but it does pay off in the long run, because you're buying the expertise. You're not, the people have to teach them. Anyway, I'm going to stop now.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. So in other words, you hire a ready-made solution, as opposed to having to create one, and then all the growing pains to come with firing people and hiring people and training. So you sound like you have a great passion and affection for your guys. So you obviously have a really strong team. So what are your main principles for hiring good people?
Okay, so hiring people, I think the most important point for me is only hire people you would go and have dinner with, you would go on a vacation with, you like to be around, because as self-employed people, as we are, entrepreneurs, we can choose these people to be around us. Don't make the mistake and just, search for a skill set and see, okay, that person probably knows what they're doing, but they're not really nice. And they respond really late, and I'm not, I'm kind of okay with the work that they do, but I can't get in touch. So for me, it's basically putting an ad out there, like a job ad, ask people to fill in the Google form with a kind of trick question at the end, asking them, for example, the first line in your application should be the color red. And if I get applications and there is not the word red in them, in the first sentence, then I'll just skip them, because somebody didn't pay attention first. And then I go ahead and I sift through them, and I ask them to send me a test project. I'm going to give you an example, if I may. I searched for that Filipino virtual assistant that I love. And what I did was I sent her a link to a product and an Excel sheet where it says, said title, bullet points, HTML product description, measurements, materials. So the key point in that was HTML product description. You know, everything else you could have gotten out of the pictures and stuff. But the HTML product description, you know, you had to copy that. You had to figure out what HTML is if you didn't know what that was. And then you have to paste it in. So I had like 18 people send it back to me, 12 of them, you know, I didn't like the layout. It was really messy. Sometimes it was centered. Sometimes it was, you know, left aligned, right aligned. And I like things to look neat. And I'm German after all. And then, and then, you know, 12 of them, I asked them whether they can talk to me. And some of them, you know, dropped out because they had another client. And then it was, I think, 8. And of the 8, 5 didn't show up, 3 didn't show up to the interview. And then there was Marie Lou, my girl, who, you know, she had, it's a funny thing because her internet was crap. And she moved from her apartment to her cafe, then the laptop didn't work. And then she tried it with her phone. And that's the thing, she tried it with her phone. And she, you know, she could talk to me through her phone with video. We're going to touch that as well, I think. You know, and I really liked her because she was so proactive. You know, she was really trying to make this happen. And then I said, look, we're going to talk tomorrow again. Please make sure to have efficient, you know, internet. And then it was good. So it's not like, you know, she'd had to drop out because her internet sucked the first time, but because I really got along with her and they gave her a second chance, but I had a good gut feeling.
Excellent. And so let's unpick some of that, because there's already a lot coming back. I'm just making some notes here, and I'm not actually, you know, texting my mum or something, but I'm making notes that this is very important. So the first thing is, don't just hire for skill set, hire people you'd have dinner with or go on vacation with. It sounds really obvious, but actually, you're the first person to actually articulate that. Maybe it's because it takes a woman to kind of acknowledge that we're dealing with humans, not robots. And the rest of the guys that I speak to is mostly, it's far too male dominated. But fortunately, my mastermind have some intelligent women, and there aren't enough intelligent women being interviewed for Amazon stuff, in my opinion. But that's such an obvious thing that maybe as men, we just miss the really obvious things like that. And then I love the fact that basically your process is quite simple, but at each point you're testing people, not so much on what they do, but the way they do it. That's the first thing. And the other thing is that there are multiple stages, filters you put people through. So by the time you're considering hiring somebody, you haven't just gone from, like, you know, one idea and then hire. It's kind of this filter, then that filter, then that filter, then that filter. So yes. Tell us a little bit more about that. Why you feel that's important?
Okay, so I don't hire for skills. I hate like hard skills, but soft skills, because obviously, if I search somebody who's going to, let's say, do customer service, yeah, then I would have them answer an email. Like, I would draft a really upset email from a customer and say, "How would you get back to that?" Then I would go look for grammar and you know, empathy and stuff like that. But what's really important to me is how they deal with situations, how they, you know, like the attention span is with the red, for example. Also, you know, I have to be able to talk to them easily. For example, with Marie Lou, that girl, we sometimes, you know, I call her up and we just talk for 30 minutes and I give her like personal advice, you know, just things like that. Be like, this is like a relationship. It's very personal. And it's very difficult for me to spot how I do that exactly, but it's more like, look how, as you said, what, you know, how they do it. And especially with the, as I said, center, right aligned, left aligned. And it's just a visual thing that I have going on. And if this is messy, you know, I can't let them organize more Google Drive because that's going to be messy as well. And you could also ask them to, you know, organize like an Excel sheet or something like that, how they would do that. And this is how you would see if you have like the same communication as in organization skills or something like that.
Yeah. And I think, but a lot of it comes down to the interaction and the quality of it, and also how they do things, not what they're doing. So the fact that they haven't taken care of the details with the alignment or something, or reading the actual brief that you gave them, just implies they don't take care of details. Not based on what they say on a CV, you can easily say very detail-oriented person. Yes. Anyone can say that, but judging by their actions, which is, I think, so much more of a reliable guide to the future. As they say, I can't remember who said it, said Seth Godin said, you know, audition people, don't interview them. And as a former musician and still do bits of musician, I can relate to that. You know, yeah. Somebody can talk a good game until you sit them in front of a piano and say, right, play this, and then yes. You can tell pretty damn quickly whether they're any good or not. So yeah. It's exactly the same approach. I really like it.
This is why I also do the test thing before the interview, so I don't waste my time. I don't want to waste my time. And yes, so that's really important. And also, you know, like instructions, as you said, if they read the, or if I talk to them, if, you know, I usually did it like that. I had like an interview with them after they passed the first test. And then I said, I'm going to send you a second test now. And please get back to me within 24 hours. If you can't, let me know. You know, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. But I need, you know, this that somebody's reliable, that they say, I'll do it. And then they do it. And for example, also like a tiny, tiny little thing, you say, this is a task project. Please get back to me first if this is okay, and then you can start. And, you know, one girl just sent me the project back. And I'm like, okay, you didn't read the last sentence, which is all right. Well, you know, the project was good. But these are like tiny little things that you can think about. You know, please give me your okay before you start, or ask for some information back that, you know, if they don't give, they didn't read it. Because these people, especially in Filipinos, they have like millions of interviews, you know, and millions of, you know, tests and emails they go through. They're desperately trying to find somebody to take them on. And you also get a lot of very sad stories. For example, you know, my husband just lost his job. We have 4 kids. We need a job. And, oh my, that's really sad. But this is not why I can hire you, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and there may be a reason why the husband lost his job as well. You never know, right? I mean, it depends on the situation.
Yes. But, well, not really that. But it's very difficult for me, especially when I work with another Amazon seller. They hired her because they thought, you know, they're doing something good. And I said, don't do it. And because I felt like she would be too motherly to, you know, not on the job. Because if you have 4 kids screaming in the, you know, next room, we are not your first priority, which is really mean. I know that. But I'm an entrepreneur after all. And I think about these things. And, you know, the other girl we had, she had a dog and she was happy and single.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's part of the mix, right? I mean, you've got to be realistic. I mean, I have friends with kids, and naturally enough, the kids are their top priority, and they end up calling in sick more often than somebody who doesn't have kids. And that's fine. And there are legal issues if you get too biased in hiring new mothers or new fathers or whatever it is. But the thing is, we don't have to go through a bunch. We don't have to defend our decision in the court of law like hiring in the UK or Germany. One of the advantages of outsourcing is that without being an ass about it, to put it politely, I suppose, without being nasty about it, you have to be businesslike and think, is this person in the right mental headspace to work? And if they have 4 screaming kids versus none, there's a fairly obvious answer that's implied by that. And but, you know.
But I also think, you know, I would totally hire a mother who tells me I have a separate office. And because, you know, we did talk to, you know, I talked a lot to the girl who had these 4 kids, and they were screaming behind her all the time. And I'm like, how can you even, you know, think? You can't. Yeah. So obviously you're making a bunch of mistakes, and I can't repeat myself a million times.
Yeah.
And so I was in charge of the team thing back then. I'm not, you know, I kind of helped them. So, yeah, doesn't happen in my team.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, again, it's not a question of being biased based on the outside circumstances. It's based on people's behavior. If you talk to them, they have a well-lit, organized physical space, and they have like 10 kids, but they have a nanny next door looking after them, or they're at school. It doesn't matter, really. They can focus on your work. That's fine. If they're chaotic and everything about the way they do things spells chaos, that's what you're going to get if you hire them. Yes. And it's just, yeah, it's based on behavior, not prejudice, really, isn't it? It's based on what people do, not what they say. And I think this is really, really important. It sounds like a lot of common sense, that it is, but it's amazing how little common sense people speak in the Amazon world. It's crazy. They want a magic solution. They'll pay $400 for some course that tells you how to do some tricksy things, which might include, include the word red in your application or something. But what they don't look for is just common sense. If somebody's late to an interview, if they're producing physically messy work, that's probably what they're going to do if you hire them. So don't hire them. So yeah. Thank you for the note of common sense. Maybe we need a woman to point out emotions and a German to point out that messy means messy. But tell us about the interview then. So obviously at some point, apart from, you know, these common sense behavior-based things, you do have an interview. So now one of the things I've heard, let's address this thing, because you've only got one Filipino worker, but you obviously have experience in hiring Filipinos and working with them. There is a cultural, I don't know if it's a truth or a myth, there's a cultural idea that people put around that the Filipinos really aren't keen on talking either on a phone call or audio call of some kind on Skype or on video. And therefore, you shouldn't be trying to interview them that way. And on the other hand, there's some people, and I would include myself in that, who feel like I need to be able to have a conversation to feel comfortable with somebody. So where do you sit on that? And what's your reasoning for that?
Okay. So first thing first, I have to have a conversation. If I don't have a conversation, you don't have a job. Because I need to know who you are, how you speak, how you articulate, how you phrase like the words and everything, how you speak to me. And if that doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. Also, I had like a lot of interviews of Filipinos, and not one of them asked me not to talk to them, which is, so it kind of surprises me that this is like a rumor going around. But you always, always go after what I said. Would you have dinner with that person? Even, like air quoting here, even a Filipino. Which is weird because I really love my girls and everybody who I hired. And I don't want people to think that, it's just cheap work, because it's not. They're, hardworking and they're super sweet and very honest, from my perspective. But also comes down to who I chose, which is why I can say these things. And so I think it's important to talk to them, but also make sure to ask questions like, do you have a separate office? Do you have a backup idea about when, your internet goes off? Because that's a lot of, things that people don't ask. They don't ask about, what about the plan B of your internet? Because, we don't think about it. But I do get every month the occasional WhatsApp message or iMessage that says, oh, I don't have internet. And she does go to cafes and everything, so she's very proactive. But I need that second plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, a lack of a plan B is just again, in the Amazon space, it always blows my mind that any professional should have a plan B. You've got a backup for your website. If you build an aircraft, you've got to hope that if one engine fails, the thing can land with the other engine. You've got to hope that people have done their job. But people create businesses based on plan A or nothing. And I feel it's just everything about and this is the problem, not of the outsourcer, but the business builder, is that their mentality is plan A, that's it, plan A. I'm like, okay, what if that doesn't work? Do you have a plan B? If you have an Amazon account, do you have a Shopify account in case that doesn't work? If you have an outsourcer and they go sick, do you have another outsourcer? And what about your outsourcer? Yeah, exactly. You said, do they have a way to get online? Do they have a way to communicate? If Skype's down, can you text them? Can you PM them? Whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, I find that plan B and plan C are often actually real in life, It's not just a theory. So yeah, I can't say enough about that, how true that is.
Yeah.
So what do you actually say in the interview? What are your kind of main interview questions, or what are your classic, apart from, do you have a backup for your internet, which is an amazingly good question?
Well, first things, I would just ask them, where are you and how are you doing today? And, what did you do in your first job? Why are you searching for a new job now? And most of them, you know, I talked to were just like, well, my employee, my Amazon seller, they went out of business. So I went out of business. And so asked them about, you know, what did they do? And it's very casual, because I feel like this is the part of the entire, you know, hiring process where I get to know what they're like, ease them a little, make them feel comfortable. Because when people are comfortable, they do reveal things that they should not be revealing. For example, I asked the girl, so I see that you have a ring. Are you engaged? Yes. And it's like, oh, then kids are coming, right? And we were searching for somebody like full time, like really, you know, like a team leader. And she said, yes, I'm pregnant. And I'm like, okay, I can't, in 3 months, I can't work with you because I'm searching for somebody who's taking over my role. Things like that. It's not, you know, again, if a girl gets pregnant while working with us, and it happens all the time, two of my girls are pregnant, okay? I'm really, you know, I'm a woman, don't worry about it. But these are things that I need to know, and I don't think she would have told me if I hadn't been so nice, you know? Mm. And again, with the pregnant, I know that, but it's an example. It's a real life example what happened, and I can't hire her because I was the outsourced girl searching for somebody else and can't do it.
Yeah. So again, you're picking up, I suppose, on some just normal life cues. And again, I don't want to be sexist, and it would be against myself anyway, but you know, I'm a man. So therefore my wife has a haircut. She'll come back and, you know, we'll go out with some friends. And the first thing that happens is that a female friend will say, oh, wow, I love your hair. When did you get that done? And I'm like, oh my God, I thought there was something different. But being a straight man, I didn't really notice. And I didn't say anything. She's probably spent £100 on hairdressing. I didn't notice. So the first thing to say to all the men out there is like, guys, notice details. Like, she's got an engagement ring on. That means she's probably engaged. Like, yes. Ask about that. It sounds like common sense, but we don't have it as men, maybe. You know? Yes,
perhaps. But also, you know, another real life example was, so I asked her, so what do you do? How do you make money at the moment, right? You have got to live. You got to live. And she said, I have an online business. I sell things on Shopify. And I said, oh, okay. So is that going well? Yes, it's going well. We are going to have like a local store here. And then I thought, well, honestly, honey, you know, if you're working full time for me, you can't have your online business, your local business, and work full time for us. You can't do that. And these are, you know, things that you learn in conversation. So conversation is key. And it's not about the skills. She can tell you about the skills, but also what, you know, Filipinos do a lot. I asked her, how are you doing? And she goes on with, So I worked for that person, I worked for that, and I did this, and I did this, and I did this for like 15 minutes. And then I say, I didn't really have to know that. I could see that on your profile, right? I just want to know how you're doing, what's happening.
Excuse me, sorry, just dying here on the podcast. But yeah, I think sometimes it's one of the other things that you're picking out to be more concrete about it is that it's about their time. That if you ask them about their life, they reveal what they do with their days and their weeks. And it can quite quickly emerge, as you said, okay, if somebody's pregnant and starting a new business and their mother's needing a lot of care, that's like 80 hours a week. I mean, how are they going to find 40 hours a week for you, you know? And again, that's a very concrete number of the like that you can come out of it with, like they're working 40 hours a week. You can guesstimate that. Yes. But it comes from not asking a direct question, but just asking about their life and getting the overall picture from them over a 10-minute conversation, right?
But also, one last thing, like for me, the most important question of the entire interview is how do you spend your free time?
Okay.
Because if they don't have, you know, something to do in their free time, then they can't come down, they can't, unwind, forget about work, recharge. You know, Mary Lou, she's a big church-going, you know, girl. She does a lot of, you know, musical stuff and Bible studies and everything. She's super happy with it. And I'm very happy that she has that kind of thing going on for her. But if they tell me I work, you know, I don't have free time, I work or I sleep, then it's hard. It's hard to wrap my head around that because I'm a big fan of free time, as we all are. And I know that we have a luxury of that, especially in the West. But if they, you know, for example, one of my girls that I hired, she said, you know, I love watching Friends. So I watch Friends all the time. And I can completely relate to that because I'm crazy about Friends. And so we had something to talk about. She was really caught off guard with that question. So I asked, what do you watch on Netflix? And she's like, Friends. So very common questions. But I think it's also like, I am like that, you know, I'm very casual. I can be super strict, but I need that personal connection. Like, sweetie, honey, you know, I'm just like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's without being, I mean, you obviously have the advantage that you're naturally very a people person, you're very interested in people, you're very comfortable talking, and, you know, that makes it easy for you to do interviews like this. But also, you know, on the other side of the equation, you're good at people, at putting people at their ease and that sort of thing. And I guess not everyone can be like you, and they don't have to do that typical Amazon thing of, oh, like, Nadine has got blonde, long blonde hair and is German. Maybe I need to put on a German accent and no, you don't have to make yourself into a copy of people, guys. You just need to learn the basic lesson, which is
be yourself.
Exactly. Just about to say it. It's just that thing of being real and not trying to go through some cookie cutter process to recognize that the art of interviewing is an art. You're going to cock it up a few times. You need to get confident with that. But also, over time, you just get more comfortable at being yourself whilst doing something quite artificial to you at the beginning, which is talking to somebody on Skype in seven time zones away from you, or six in your opinion.
And especially, you know, when you're being yourself, you attract people who are like yourself. And if you don't like to communicate much, then, and that person doesn't like to communicate much, they're probably a perfect fit, right? But yeah. I would still encourage you to talk, like, sometimes, like five minutes or per week, maybe, just to check in. You know, for example, sometimes you just don't know that somebody died, or, you know, the dog got into the hospital, and you just keep piling on work. And you should not do that. You have to know what is going on in their life, you know, to be like, okay, is everything fine with you? Can I give you another task? Is that fine? Is that okay?
Yes, yeah, checking in
the position. They should also be feel so comfortable that they will share things, but without thinking they're going to be fired with somebody, you know, something happens in their life.
Yes. Yeah, that's really important. So that brings us on to the next question, which is really a couple of things. Well, I mean, first of all, the checking in regularly thing. So you just put your finger on the fact that if you're a certain type of person, you don't communicate very well. And I would put myself in that bracket. On the one hand, I communicate. I love communication. That's why I love doing the podcast and interviewing you. It's great fun. I love that interaction. On the other hand, when it comes to staff, I tend to be like a sort of one of those fire and forget missiles, like, do this, 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 this. Okay, bye. And I do that with everyone. I do that with my business partner who's actually owns half the business with me in one of my Amazon businesses. I do that with, and this is not good communication. And I know that. So what is the discipline that somebody like myself needs to get? What does regular mean? How does that work in terms of communication rhythm?
That's such a sweet question. How does that work? You know,
I admit I'm bad at this. <You know?
laughs> Okay, so the first thing I would advise you to do is use smileys. First thing. Because I have, you know, in my Amazon group, one of my bosses, he doesn't use smileys. And I always get pissed off because it sounds like he's like very dismissive. You know, so first thing, just not all the time, but be kind, make it look, because you are not in the same office. You can't be writing, do this, and then smile at the other person, be like, yeah, could you please do it? You can't do that. So you have to, you know, put that into your writing. So the writing should also show what kind of mood you're in. And then what I do, check-in calls, right? I check in with my 12 girls about, well, it depends. Some of them every 2 months, some of them every week, because we like each other so much. We just call all the time. but I would advise you to have like a schedule, like every month, have like maybe a reminder in your calendar. Don't ignore it. Please don't ignore that reminder. Just go like, so on another note, maybe put like a lot of, like brackets or something like that, and be like, okay, so this is personal now. How are you doing? Would you like to, you know, I would like to, not, don't ask, I would, you know, would you like, but I want to chat with you. Over Skype sometime just to check in. And, you know, at first my girls were really like, oh my God, I did something wrong. They were actually feeling like that. And I didn't realize that at the time. That was 2 years ago. So now they know if Nadine asks, can we talk? It's not like, oh shit. But it's more like, you know, this is why I would tell you, I would like to talk to you, you know, just to check in, just to see how you're going and what's happening in your life. Please tell me like two or three spots where you can make time for me this week. And that's really kind. The person already knows, okay, this is nothing serious. This is just a regular check. And also I feel like things pile up. When things happen in business, bad things, and you always criticize and criticize again and criticize again, and people can't hear your voice, and even though you're not that annoyed, it might come out as really annoyed. And then, you know, be like, can I call you? Instead of always writing these bad things out, just, for example, today, real life example, one of my girls, she checks our bank every day to see, you know, the payments and everything. And she didn't book in two of our customers. One of them didn't put the invoice number on, you know, the payment, and the other one, she missed that. So we had two customers who were just like, dude, we paid your invoice and you reminded us. That's not good. That's not professional. So I went ahead and said, look, can I call you? And then, you know, because my other assistant, she wrote her and said, you know, you didn't do this and wasn't booked in and now I have to deal with the customers. It was really negative. And I said, oh. So I called her and I said, look, this is not a big deal. I fixed it. But this is how you can prevent that from happening. And she laughed at the end of it. She's like, okay, sorry about that. But before, she was really, you know, on edge. Like, oh, shit, what did I do? And that's just because she didn't hear my voice, or she didn't hear the voice of my assistant who wrote that. And it's all about communication. We're people, and, you know, writing just goes as far as it goes. You know what I mean? You can't, yeah. You know, on that kind of criticism, if you put 50 smileys on it, it's not going to make it better. It's still criticism.
Yeah. So I guess what you're saying is, it's so funny that you were saying, oh, that's very sweet. Like, you need help some communication. Trust me, I'm quite bad in this, and I'm sure that I'm not alone, having had lots of conversations with many male friends who are Amazon sellers or entrepreneurs, or just men in general, that communication is, I'm not trying to be sexist. There are some women who are terrible at communication and some men who are great. Right. But generally speaking, if you had to generalize, generally women are just much smarter communicators. So I'm quite happy to ask the dumb questions. And actually what you're saying is actually not stuff I've been doing, and it makes sense that I should do it. So, I mean, I really like the fact that you're saying, well, use voice and a personal call, because you can't really put across the nuances of a tone of voice in written communication, if I understand. And yes, also just get in message. Touch with people when there isn't a problem, so that yes. It isn't the case that all that people, the only communication people get from you is, oh dear, Mike's in touch, there must be a problem, because the only time he gets in touch. And I have been guilty of that in the past. I'm trying to overcome that. But yes. Honestly, I think, again, just like a lot of things in life, you have to just be very honest. If you know, like I know myself, that I'm guilty of doing this a lot, you have to just be very aware that you're not naturally, if you just follow your natural inclinations, you're going to go, oh, you know what? It's been about a month since I spoke to my, you know, assistant. This is not good. So therefore, you have to be artificial and structured about it. But when you interact with people, I guess you still have to be yourself. I mean, this is my takeaway from this. Have you got any other thoughts on communicating for those of us who aren't gifted at staying in touch?
But if I can give you one tip, you know, if you're not a great communicator, use voice messages over text. Because, you know, I do that a lot when I have like a task to give out. And sometimes, you know, one of my girls, you know, the girls just take it as bossy when I tell them what to do. So I just, you know, record my voice. It works really well on Skype. And I say, hey, honey. Could you please do this for me? It is due on X, Y, that. And if you can't do it, just let me know. No worries about that. I can still find somebody else to do it, or I'll do it myself. And then they are like, okay, sure. Because they hear my voice and they hear that, you know, I'm very chill. It's not like, can you do this? If not, blah, 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 you know. So that's the one thing I would encourage you to do, voice messaging. Also, if you are, if you want to have like a real personal connection, for example, I have one of my girls, I go, I walk a lot and we talk a lot on the phone, but that is purely professional. I'm not paying her for this. Also pay people if you talk to them, right? This is business. They're not doing that out of, you know, because they like you, because you're their boss. And this girl, you know, I always say, look, I'm not going to Skype you because Skype is business. And, you know, my phone, that is personal and we can talk and just chat. And I hate to see people mixing it up, you know, like WhatsApping people, you know, employees, your freelancers, or Facebooking them. Facebook and WhatsApp, please, I beg you, this is personal, this is private. And you are in, you know, getting into their private lives when they sit, you know, on the porch on Sundays with their friends having beer and you message them on WhatsApp, which when it's not super important. If it was that important, you would call. That's okay. Full stop.
I think that's really great. I think separating communication channels for different reasons or even different sets of people is immensely simplifying in life. Like, for example, I basically don't answer my phone if it's not by appointment. So I say to my you know, coaching clients or for that matter, people on my team, like, if you want to get hold of me quickly, Skype me. So I never get a Skype message. It's 99% about business. I don't have any personal interactions on Skype. But if somebody phones me on the phone and it's somebody I know, then that's personal. If somebody phones me on the phone and it isn't somebody I know, I won't answer because that is not the channel that I've agreed. And if once you open all sorts of channels up to yourself that aren't by arrangement, you open yourself up to mega massive distraction. And I could talk about that for a long time. But yeah, I think this is a part of the same thing. It's a kind of channel hygiene, isn't it? It's like, this is business, this is personal. Let's not mix the two up.
And also, you know, I for my personal well-being, I only check Skype when I'm at home. I'm not at home when I'm at the office. And on the weekend, you know, each of my girls has my private number, and they can, you know, I tell them if something is so important that it cannot wait until Monday. You know, you're having a real problem, no internet, no 24-hour thing. You know, it just doesn't work. Call me at any time, even at 2 a.m. I don't care. Because this is my name on the line. And this is like emergency, emergency, emergency. So when I see one of them, I put them into favorites. So they go through the whole do not disturb thing on my phone. Then, you know, it has to be important. And I pick up, obviously. But they would never do that just because they have a question. And I would definitely tell them off if they did.
Yeah, that's really good. Again, you give people a possible channel for when it's really needed, but you put a very, very strong condition, like in the train, I guess you'd have this in German as well, you know, pull for emergencies, penalty for improper use, £100 or whatever.
Yes.
You can use this, but only if you need it. And if you don't, I'm going to punish you for overstepping a line. So perhaps that's a very good place to leave this episode, because in the next episode, I want to focus even more on basically not so much just attracting people, but as we've already started looking into how to keep a team and how to have a really great team rather than just how to get people on the team in the first place. But a lot of wisdom already shared. And for those who want to find out more from Nadine, so I've done an interview before and we have some links to any resources you have. That'll be at amazingfba.com/Nadine E. So it's going to be two E's on it, NADINEE. Nadine Eich. So Nadine, thanks for your wisdom. And the next episode, we're going to talk about more of what we've been looking at the surface of, which is how do you keep people? How do you grow a team? Not just how do you find people, how do you grow them into a really tight-knit, well-oiled machine? So I look forward to talking to you about that. And thank you very much for your wisdom so far. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.